what's going to work out with the work like Tanya Dongaskigo, then on the Watahusa Dutch, Ungahuwe, and Hadiwa Nodus, in the Aboriginal Voices, Oscar Dewa Nyawar Oscar, Ne Joto FM, CFRC.
Douglas.
Yeah, Sean, it's
7 o'clock, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. It's still 7.
Yep, and you're doing a fine job tonight, keeping us on track.
I was going to throw like in the cable. Remember when we used to broadcast cable? We may still, I don't know. I think it was like cable 91 or something like that.
Yeah.
You don't remember?
It used to be cable, but now they've got a new number, like 200 something.
Cable 280 something. Four.
Sounds good. Yeah. That's
check
right.
that hey, out and see.
And while maybe you're doing right. that, you know, while you're talking not. About that, there is CFRC carries football games, away games and home games. But I just learned that I can't believe it's the long weekend coming up, and that it's homecoming weekend. Do you know if it is?
If it's homecoming?
Yeah,
you're at homecoming Queens. and Thanksgiving land on the same.
It's what I was just wondering. Guy,
that
heard.
Was your question.
That's my
Queen's
question.
Queen's homecoming, maybe.
That's right. And while you're doing that I'm looking to see
if this weekend.
Uh huh.
I don't know. I would think it'd be up on the wall here.
Well, but I don't.
Don't forget to mention Queen's homecoming.
The homecoming. Well, you never know, though, but it's October, and usually it's, early October, but it just seemed to be a strange weekend to do that. And in fact, I was just trying to look up for the football game, and the next football game is not until the 8th.
It's October 17th.
Oh, okay, so it's the weekend 20th. After
it's
this.
The weekend
yeah.
after.
Yeah, because on the 18th is a football game here at Queens.
Yeah. Are you hearing some feedback?
No, I was looking to see the football, who they're playing, but I it's too far away from me, the board. You're going to have to move these mics.
Says
hey, you know what?
Here,
put the mic back
Saturday,
over where you were.
Oh, last Saturday, October 5th, at Laurier.
Yeah,
and
the
then
next
the one
down.
Coming up is Waterloo, 19, October 19.
That's homecoming weekend.
Apparently.
Good. Oh, okay. Well, then.
Countdown, 9 days, 12 hours, 56 minutes away.
Oh, good.
54 seconds.
Where did you find that? That is going to be
I found it right there on Queen's Alumni.
Uh-huh.
Homecoming.
9 days away to the football game.
Ignite your tricolor spirit.
Mm-hmm.
It's that time of year again when we welcome you home to our beloved campus. Mark your calendars for October 17 to 18. To 20th, to
well, I'm glad you were able to sort
that
out for me.
Weekend packed with memories, yeah. Camaraderie, and fun-filled programming. I wonder who's going to be there. Is there any going to CFRC people going to show
coming?
Up?
Well, I hope so.
Would that we when they come is that homecoming?
They could come and do that.
Like they show up and they say, "Hey, I used to be here."
I would love to have somebody come and talk to us about.
Wouldn't that be nice? That'd be awesome.
About their days here.
Oh, I think that would be very nice.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I get.
Like we would know a lot of them because we've been here for so long.
Well.
Like some of them, they stick out in your mind.
Yes.
And then other ones, maybe not so much.
Don't do that.
What?
Yeah. Who are you anyway?
Oh, exactly. Oh, did you?
Oh.
You did a show after us.
Oh, my goodness.
When?
Hmm.
Before
hey,
us?
The ones you remember
when?
The ones who came for our bake-off.
Oh, yeah, I remember
right?
those ones.
And those folks came with their great baking and skills and the old wood stove here and everything.
Is that Twan?
That's who came to mind right away.
Okay, Dad. Tuan is the one that comes to mind all the while. He took off, though. He went to the East Coast, right?
No, but his mom delivered it.
But it was the East Coast, right?
Yeah, Dalhousie.
He went to Dalhousie to be what? He was in science or something. He was a doctor or something like that.
Yeah.
A doctor of science.
And so, I guess...
Anyways, his mom... made the Christmas delicacy of spring rolls. I think it was spring rolls.
Yes.
Yeah, it was spring rolls.
And it was a treat.
It was a good time. Mm-hmm. It was a good time.
It had no cranberries in it, you say.
It was a ginormous plate of spring rolls. And could I say they were delightful?
Mm-hmm. You could say that.
It was certainly a surprise. A pleasant surprise was on my face.
Good. I'm going to play Twin Flames Without Tears is the song. And it goes with that article that you had about the water. Because we don't want any tears over the spilt water. But the government's really kind of backpedaling on a few things. I don't know why. But we'll find out. We'll ask around. And then later this hour, not too long from now, I'm going to have a special guest, Ralph Boston. And I pre-recorded this with him at his home. And we had a nice chat. And he's written a paper about the Mississauga in this area, this territory. And so we're going to do a series that I've... Now that I've got it figured out how we could do this, and I'm going to go do another chat with him on, I'm hoping, Friday today, this week. And we'll go through, and Ralph Boston and I will have a chat. And he's going to tell us how long and how old he is, how long he's been studying this, and give us some information. It's really good. So... And I'm interested in kind of thinking about the land. So that's why I picked Without Tears by Twin Flames and how they go about creating songs that relate to the land itself. So here we go. And then we'll get organized, and we'll have Ralph Boston to chat with us.
Without any tears, now my name no take it out. anego tika atu lautaka sapilene angilanga tahagalo arama kayusivunga inu.
Well, there you go, Sean. That was Twin Flames and Without Tears. And yes. What else you have? Quickly, we have 2 minutes.
Self-identifying indigenous group got $74 million in federal cash. Inuit leader wants change.
Change it's for a, how much money?
It's a, yeah.
And he wants change?
And he wants change for that. Yeah. So it says here that as millions in the federal funding flow into Labrador group whose claims of Inuit identity have been rejected by Indigenous organizations across Canada, a national Inuit leader worries the Liberal government is putting the rights of Indigenous peoples at risk.
Mm-hmm. That's by Nathan Obed, then?
That was Nathan Obed, the president of the organization, representing about 70,000 Inuit across Canada. So he wrote a letter to Prime Minister Trudeau, and you can read more about that in CBC. It's a self-identifying Indigenous group got $74 million in federal cash.
Okay, so I see the problem is that it means that that $74 million that doesn't go to the folks who need good, clean water.
That's weird, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so the one you read
it's like
earlier.
They're shooting themselves in the foot there.
Yeah.
We'll give you $70
million. You won't. I don't know. That's a real struggle, though, isn't it?
It definitely is.
Mm-hmm. Who should be in and who should not be in and all that sort of thing. That's similar to the Algonquins of Ontario land claim. It's agreed to in principle 50 years ago. They agreed to a land claim in principle. It seems that the Ontario government's the one that's slowing it up. Yeah, to a not even a run or a walk or a meander. It's just dead stop. Anyway, all right, we got to go. We're going to go to some promos, and then our guest is ready. So we'll have Ralph Boston and my interview with him.
Hey, I'm Julian Taylor, and I'm excited that my radio show, The Jukebox, can now be heard on CFRC 101.9 FM out of Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. The show is all-inclusive. I only play music that I love and think that you'll love, too. So tune in every Tuesday morning from 10 a.m. to noon right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Your library, your story. At the Kingston Frontenac Public Library, books are just the beginning. A library card starts a lifelong adventure, connecting you to everything you need to inspire learning, creativity, and fun. With 16 locations and plenty of online services, using your library has never been easier. Study in a quiet space, meet friends and learn new things, or explore the world through a magazine or a museum pass. Become a part of our story. Visit your local library branch or find us online at kfpl.ca.
Thousands of opinions are at our fingertips, but are all opinions informed? Does your information have a source? Is your social feed based on fact? Only facts can uncover the truth. Professional journalists are committed to balanced and nonpartisan reporting, to independent commentary. They cut through the spin to give you the information and perspective you need. Journalism is essential to democracy. A watchdog over the powerful, an independent voice. Journalism is more important than ever. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Gotcha. G'day, I am CJ the DJ, the host of Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. I hope you can join me every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. Remember, put that in, Grad Chat, at 4 p.m. Tuesdays.
Special guest, and very important for me to be meeting Ralph Boston, and welcome to Aboriginal Voices.
Well, I'm pleased to be here. I lived on a lake, Buck Lake, north of Kingston. It's a big lake. We were on the south shore at the west end, and we lived in a log house. And heated with wood, and by that I mean the furnace, the cook stove, space heater, and we tried for 3 years to live off the land before we decided that I needed a cash crop. So I got back into consulting, but this time on my own hook. I'd been doing a bit of it before, but I became a sole proprietor, and I hired one person as a gopher, a woman who was about 20 years younger than I was, and the two of us made a good pair. She did the paperwork, I did the thinking and the writing, and away we went. So what happened was my property, I had bought originally about 4.5 acres on the shore of Buck Lake, but extending back into a wilderness area. And this was just north of Kingston. And because of the fact that my house property had never been surveyed correctly, any adjustments that were made at the Kingston end of our property, which was south, all the adjustments would accumulate in the last lot, which was mine on Buck Lake. So I was in danger of losing property if there was any error in adjustment. And this was on two sides. So every time a piece of property came up in this wilderness area at auction for non-payment of taxes, I didn't get it. So eventually I had 16 properties in addition to my own and about 350 of wilderness land, 350 acres.
Now, what year was that that you first moved there to Buck Lake?
Pardon me?
What year did you move to Buck Lake? Roughly.
Well, it was 70 years ago.
Okay.
And we were there for 66 years. As I said, I tried to live off the land for three, but had to go back to work to get income, a cash crop. But that's where I got involved with the wilderness side, because some of the fellows that I hunted with on that property were 50% Native. And I learned a great deal from them about their rules and regulations for hunting. And I was also dealing with Queen's University Biological Station, which was on the extreme east end of all this wilderness property I had accumulated. So one day we were sitting around coffee at Cubs, as they call it, Q-U-B-S, and they said, you know, we've been finding Indian artifacts on the place all over. In some places there are quite a few pieces. One person we know gathered a basket full of arrowheads and spearheads and miscellaneous other related weaponry. And we have no idea who they were or where they lived. I said, well, we ought to do something about that. I'm interested. I work with some of the indigenous people when I'm hunting, and I've learned a good deal about them. And as a youngster, I cottaged north of Toronto in the Big Cedar Lake area north of Peterborough, which was close to Stony Lake. And Stony Lake had a lot of Native people in there who were fishing guides. And one time I met a couple of them with an aluminum canoe. And we were at the foot of a falls, and they were debating with a pair of American fishermen whether they should try this or not. And when I showed up, they said, well, Ralph knows the river. He'll take you up over the falls and then get over to the Big Cedar Lake. And good bass fishing there. Who knows what you'll catch over the river. And I was 14 at the time. So I took these two Americans and their brand new aluminum canoe on a fishing trip. It was quite an experience. The brand new canoe, we came back after we'd caught bass along the way and we'd had a good day fishing. We pulled out and had lunch. And we were coming down, and where we'd left the car was at the foot of a falls. It was a slow slope. And they said, well, we've got an aluminum canoe. It's brand new. It should be able to take that. And I said, well, yeah, I guess so. There's some rocks there, but, you know, we got a good deal of water, and you'd see there's white water. And he said, well, this is going to be fun. And I said, okay, well, we'll carry on. So we went over the rapids, down 100 yards of white water, pulled it out at the end, and all we had was one head-sized bump in the bottom that had come up where we'd hit one rock. Well, they were really a bit of gas. I said, that's our brand new canoe, look. I said, don't worry. Picked up a stone and pounded back straight. Away they went. So I've always been involved, it seems, with Native people in my employment. Mm-hmm. This is a big hydro project for Quebec electrical system. And the fellow that we had on our team, which was one of a private consulting firm owned by Toronto Dominion Bank. So we had some pretty high-powered, high-priced people. This fellow was a chief engineer for Ontario Hydro on this project. or Quebec Hydro on this project. And he was the smartest engineer I have ever encountered, bar one. And I was really impressed with him. And I've worked in the north with engineers who were native people. And they all had university degrees in engineering. One had 2 degrees. And I was always impressed with their intelligence and their ability to tackle sophisticated engineering projects. Then when I was living at Buck Lake, my daughter was going with a fellow whose parents were half Aboriginal. So she and he got me interested with the Aboriginal people in the Buck Lake area, which is north of Kingston.
Right.
And our territory where we went hunting was, again, also just north of Kingston.
So you're talking the area like around Buck Lake and towards Lake Opinicon
and Opinicon,
Bedford Mills.
In that area, yeah.
Towards Westport.
And with those fellows, I discovered that hunting with them, they had rules and regulations that respected the game you were working on. I talk about this in my paper. The kind of thing is they would not allow you to catch undersized fish. You would be shunned if you did. If you shot and wounded anything, you retrieved it. If you didn't, you were shunned. They also had rules and regulations as to what you could do in season and what you couldn't do out of season. And this related, I realized, to they were actually managing their food stocks, because they were making sure that you would let the small fry grow and you would harvest the big old age things that were still prime eating. And the same thing happened to the way in which they harvested berries, other tree fruits, ducks, the same thing. Their wildlife management practices were always impressive. Now, you can see that when I was talking to people at the Queen's University Biological Station, they said, there used to be native people here. I know. Mm-hmm. I've hunted with them, I've fished with them, and so forth. But we know bugger all about them. They said, well, we ought to do something. Well, I'll go see what I can dig up. No charge. It's a fun exercise. And
By the term dig up, you don't mean go out and do an archaeological dig. You mean you're going to find out about these things, right? You know, because some people were talking about studying indigenous people from a long time ago.
No, these are current.
That's right.
They were live people that I met.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I said, I started out when I was a boy of 14 meeting fishermen that I admired, not only for their abilities, but for their self-management in the practice of the stock they were harvesting. So when I said to the Queen's people, I'd like to find out, you know, where these natives come from, because I just meet the odd one here and there, but where'd they come from? How did they get here? How many of them are there? And they said, we've been thinking about this for years, but we have no idea. I said, okay, well, I'll do a study for you of the indigenous people on your property and my property, because they abut. And, you know, that was, I guess, they had a lot of property, about 1,000 acres of land that the indigenous people were on because we'd found artifacts. Mm-hmm. And the odd person that was still surviving and hunting on it, I had met, and they did too. So that's the genesis of how I got involved with this study. Well, the first thing I found was that the people that were the natives there were Mississauga. And we thought they lived on the land, but we couldn't find any settlements. There were none. Because it turned out that these people were what I call nomads. They move from place to place using tents that were readily taken down and wagons or backpacks or even dogs to move from one site to another. So that's why we couldn't find any residences. So we're talking about the predecessors who would have left souvenirs for us to find hadn't been there. They've been traveling over it, but they hadn't been settling there. Now, I've had a great argument with First Nation chiefs about whether I am correct using the term nomads. Mm. Maybe you can help me. They say, that's not true. They were not nomadic. They lived on the land, and they have a word for it. And I'm damned if I can remember it. I would love if you could find out what that word is that the native people would like to be referred to as not nomadic. Because my interpretation of nomads was people who had no permanent home and traveled and took all their belongings that they need to survive from one campsite to another. Well, they said, well, they weren't campsites, they were dwellings. And they could be there for a year or two, but generally, I understood that they followed the game that they were searching, or the food, fruits or berries or tree fruits or whatever they were feeding on at that time, in addition to meat foods. So there's one of the things that I'd like to get the answer to. I've had the answer, but my memory's so poor I can't remember it.
I'm just going to jump in here because there was 2006 a musician who came to an Anishinaabe musician from Northern Ontario, and he came to Queens to play at during the Frosh Week in 2006. And I got to meet him then and chat with him, and he left us his CD. And the title of the CD is Nomads.
Is it?
Yes. And his name is Najuan. His first name's Mark.
Uh-huh.
And so I'll play that song right now for you so that you can enjoy listening to his concept. But I just recently, about a year ago, was able to interview Mark again. He was working on another project, mm-hmm. But he didn't use that term anymore because he himself has realized that by living on the land, the territory that they could travel either by walking or by going by boat or canoe, right. Or in the winter, snowshoeing and building toboggans.
Well, manual labor, yeah.
Well, yeah, self-propelled, we'll call it. But he said that the territory, often they did not go too far out of that territory. So they considered all of it to be home.
That's right.
Yeah. And so I'm going to call and talk to him later this month.
Well, I agree with that concept because one of the things I did was look at how much land did a nomadic family need to survive? And I've got the figures here, and I guess it's probably a time to take a quick break and I'll have a look at it.
Okay. Well, let's go to Mark Najuan and...
705. Filled up the tank for the drive. On the road and we won't take long. Filled the playlist with our songs. Up the 469. Keeping it chill, taking our time. Easy foot on the gas. Except when it comes time to pass.
I'll come to see. What's your name?
Now, before you go, can you tell me about your song Nomads?
Yeah. Nomads is the final track off the album. And these are all the songs are based off of these conversations I had with my grandfather over the first year of the pandemic. So, it wasn't an album at the start. It was kind of just me almost interviewing my grandfather for a year while we were both kind of locked down, like 1,000 kilometers apart. And, we talked about like his life in Sandy Lake First Nation, growing up on the trap line with his brothers and sisters, but we had never actually ever talked about his experience in residential school and, you know, meeting my grandmother there and falling in love with her and them kind of eloping after that. So, like, all these kind of stories and kind of being that vulnerable was kind of new to the both of us, so we kind of got really close over that first year and I guess listening back to those interviews at the end of 2020, you know, I ended up writing one song and then I wrote two songs and then wrote an album, and they're all kind of almost all kind of in the style of kind of call and response, you know. Like it's going to be a mixture of kind of clips from these conversations and the kind of the songs that follow them. So Nomads for sure is kind of this kind of melancholic but also kind of hopeful, triumphant track, you know, and I think that was kind of where I was when I finished the album, which is kind of like, you know, I got to record our family story, at least like a small part of it, and kind of, you know, immortalize it a little bit. You know, a lot of the indigenous history is kind of oral, right? So a lot of it kind of gets lost over time. So being able to kind of capture something and make like a little time capsule or something is kind of pretty special.
Even knowing that there's all of that information that you've been able to condense into, you know, a single and trickle into a whole record, like that's, wow, that's a lot. Was your grandfather one of the first people that listened to it?
Yeah. I'd played him some of the demos, and I mean, he's family, so he's, I mean,
bias a little bit.
He was super thrilled. But like when I got to work with Hill Kirkutis, and I got to work with this amazing team of musicians, and it was able to kind of play him some more mastered tracks, was kind of super special, because like I remember I went up to Thunder Bay where he's living, and I picked him up and we were driving around, and I just kind of put on a track. And I didn't even kind of tell him, and I just...
I hope you recorded that.
No,
did you?
Oh,
that reaction.
I know, because like...
I don't even know either. I can picture it.
No, that was just for me, I guess.
Invisible fear.
Some better series to a beat that's run for an hour. Steady. Until our dead people...
I played the track and I still think like a lot of people are kind of surprised that like I kind of don't sound how I talk.
Yeah, no, not at all.
And so my grandfather also kind of like he didn't realize it was the track until like it was like the one song where I actually used like a sample of him talking, and then he was just kind of like, oh, well, that's me on the radio.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that's so great.
Yeah. So that's Nomads. I actually played that track.
Well, welcome back, Sean. I hope you enjoyed that. The first of our conversation with Ralph Boston, and he's going to be talking about local Mississauga peoples in the Kingston area and north of Kingston. So I'm glad to have the time to have a conversation with him. And we're going to do that each week over several weeks, because Ralph has a wealth of information, and he's been living in the area for many, many years and talking with people and working with them, so as we heard in that. But when Ralph talked about the term he used was nomads, and I thought, oh, that's perfect, because we have a couple of singers, indigenous singers, who have songs about the land. And the first one we had there was Mark Najuan, and his song was called Land of Skoden. Skoden could be a word that Ralph may be using, and so we'll talk later about that. But then we followed up with Asanabe, who had a song, Nomad. And so I just thought, perfect timing to have, to support Ralph in what he's doing. And Ralph's going to be coming back again next week, and for the next couple of weeks, we're going to have some chats. He's going to go into depth with some information about the land and the people and what he's learned over time. So, a lot of fun. Hope you enjoyed that, Sean. All right, let's go off to some other new music. We have a brand new song from Gaskin.
Now won't let me sleep. try to find peace and healing. But it won't let me go.
Discover. It feels like home to me. How strong and tired. It feels like home to me. Sometimes. gotta stay on point like the fastest arrow. Bring hope to the people of grassy narrows. One piece in the land can go back to battle. It's fire and action, casting shadows. From old to the new, let us show you the truth. Light up the path, there's a glow in the youth. Boost you to the world, this is where we live. So let the journey begin.
It feels like home.